Welcome to this episode of Smart Citizen. I'm really excited to be speaking to school board candidate Joanna Moran. I'm Emily Bose, and this is Smart Citizen. We're going to jump right in. Joanna, can you tell me a little bit more about yourself and why did you decide to run for school board?
I'm Joanna Moran and I'm running for Rose Hall District. So, and real quick plug, it doesn't matter where you are in Virginia Beach, you can vote for me. And a lot of people know that our voting stuff is really weird. So it's really strange. So, my parents were missionaries to Ghana, West Africa for 15 years. And I lived there for nine. I always like to joke and say that I'll answer questions. And yes, I did have a pet monkey. And yes, I got licked by a giraffe, but I preferred the monkey over the giraffe. So, but my parents taught me at an early age to kind of have the servant's heart. And so I joined the U.S. Navy because I wanted to serve my country. And I joined as a gas turbine mechanic. That's actually what brought me to Virginia Beach. And I actually received my associate's here and my bachelor's here. And then in 2015, I'd gotten out of the military early before and I went into private security, but I really wanted to still kind of, I still had that servant heart that I wanted to do. I wanted to do something in law enforcement or, so I joined the Department of Corrections and I served as a correction officer for 4 years. But about a year and a half ago, I missed the trades. I missed working with equipment. And so, I actually at the same prison, I just transferred to the maintenance department as the general trade supervisor. So the reason I'm running, is several reasons, but the main one is because I want to be a voice for those that feel like they've been silenced. Cause I know how it is to like, you vote for people and then they don't actually, it seems like it doesn't matter how many emails or anything you write them that they just don't care. They don't seem to care. And I kept saying, you know, if you're going to complain about something, you need to do something. And then the main thing was that I wanted to just be that voice for people. The other reason is because I know how important it is to address student discipline because my son was assaulted in our school system. So, and I think that we need to address those issues. The other reason, and because it's close to my heart, is that I want, we have a great vocational system, but I want people to know that not everybody is college bound and that's okay. And so that's why I'm an advocate for increased vocational classes. So that's just a little bit of why I decided to run. So
great. Thank you for that intro. I was really interested in your background, you know, growing up overseas. Obviously that's quite a different experience than most people generally would have, but especially most people in Virginia Beach. So how do you feel like that experience shaped your perspective and what do you think that would uniquely give you to bring to the school board?
Well, I always tell everybody that I loved growing up in Ghana, West Africa. I loved it. When you go from 3 months old to like 9 years old, it really is kind of like a home, you know, and I love the people that I grew up with. But what I can tell you is that it also gave me a huge appreciation for the United States and how many freedoms that we have that a lot of people take for granted. And there's a lot of people that have never been overseas or like in my time in the Navy gone over and really realize like what countries, there are amazing countries out there. There are amazing people out there, but the freedoms that we have are extremely unique. And so it really made me appreciate it, but at the same time have a different aspect because I've seen, I've seen poverty. I've seen people, in starving in the streets. I have seen the things that actually you see on the program where they're like, hey, donate 30 cents. And you see, you know, when you live in a different country, you actually get to see the things. It isn't a TV program anymore. Mm-hmm. And so, and then to grow up with everybody that was missionaries, not only missionary parents, but then everybody around you was either a missionary kid, like an MK or, you know, missionary kid, or they were missionaries themselves. And so to really see those people, cause you don't go into missionaries to become rich. You just, that's not how it works. So you really, you have to be passionate about what you do. And so I think I have just been a part of so many different people and like communities. And so it really brought like a mindset that I think is different for me, in that I can, it doesn't matter what room I'm in, like I can probably either pick out something that we have in common, or something that like that you like, that I like, you know, whatever it may be. And I think it's it also it changes the way that you look at things. And I think that's I always joke, because I've been to public school, private school, and international school. So I've experienced all of it. So yeah, but I think it just gives me a unique perspective on the way it is, because I've just experienced so many different things in my life. So
let's talk about school discipline. I know that's been a big topic of conversation this year in the school board election, and everybody seems to feel like there are areas we can grow in that and have a variety of different solutions. What would be some practical solutions that you would propose? And maybe stepping back from that a little bit, what would you say are the challenges that you see that we're facing with student discipline? How would you define the problem, if you will? And then what are some practical solutions that you would look to implement if you were elected?
I hate to oversimplify stuff, but realistically, it's consistency. There's no, like, it's one school does it a certain way. Even one class will do it a certain way. The teachers don't feel like they're backed up by the administration. You have it where, you know, my son was assaulted and the kid only got 5 days suspension. And it's like, but then they have other starts where they're like, oh, there's zero tolerance. Okay. Hmm. So what you're not being consistent. And so that's why I always say, and I've learned it through corrections, I've learned it through private security in the military, is firm, fair, and consistent. And no matter who you are or who your dad is or where you come from, I think you can appreciate firm, fair, and consistent. Because if this child broke the rule the same way this child broke the rule, they should both, there shouldn't be a difference. And I think it seems unfair, because they're like, well, why am I getting treated differently than this kid did? Mm. And the other thing is that with that, we need to get our teachers and students are not there to like be worried about their safety. They're there. The teachers are there to teach and the students are there to learn. So I think that anything that gets in the way of that needs to be addressed. So I would say firm, fair, and consistent. You know, there's guidelines for a reason. There's rules for a reason. So
would you be looking to implement a policy that's consistent across the board, across all the schools, like and I know it's hard because you're not in the meetings or seeing the research, right, or things that they have, but just curious to hear some of the ideas kind of on a practical level, how you would look to implement it.
Right. Well, first of all, I'd have to figure out like what the policies are across the board. I know the student handbooks, almost every student handbook has certain rules that are in there, and they're all very similar. So it's almost like people aren't implementing those. Like, it's almost like we always call it like there's policy, right? And then there's best practice, right? And right. So it's almost like they're like, well, the best practice is that we look at this, and progressive discipline and those kind of things, I understand it. And there's situational awareness that happens where you're like, but you can't say that this is the end all be all, this is the rule, but then, you know, not tweak it. So I'd want to come in, I want to take a look at it and see like where are the differences, talk to the teachers, find out why, you know, what's going on, why they aren't, you know, getting the help they need or whatever, or like, why is it that some teachers are saying when they discipline a student, send him or her out, and then they bring the kid right back and don't do anything about it. You know, how does that help the teacher? Because then it's almost like the kid learns not to respect the teacher or what they say. So
I know
I'd be more on like really looking at the rules, making sure that that they're followed, because I'm not 100% sure, but I would say probably 89% of the time the rules are already there. It's just they're not getting enforced.
I see. One thing that I'm curious about, and if this is outside your area of expertise or study, by all means, we don't have to get into it, but given that you've worked in corrections, and I know something that has influenced student discipline in our schools specifically is the idea of the school to prison pipeline and some of those kinds of things. Is that something you've looked into at all? Or, you know, what do you have any thoughts around that, given that you've kind of seen that end of the spectrum, if you will?
Right.
And how does that influence how you're looking at student right. discipline?
And I would say from just visual, like just looking at everything, it does seem like the younger generation that you can tell really didn't there the consistency wasn't there, and that lack of I'm looking for the word. Basically, it's like if there's no when you break consequences. There we go. The lack of actual consequences that later on in life, they're like, you know, something happens, they go to jail, they still, you know, that you can tell which ones really didn't, you know, there wasn't that consequence that was addressed. And that's not always the case, but it's just interesting that we, as a society, we get surprised about things, but yet you can kind of look at it and watch as we got more and more laxed about teaching our kids what consequence actually means, that all of a sudden the population of prison got younger and younger and younger. So, and that's just something I've noticed. It's not that I haven't done enough research on it to you know, say one way or another. But it's just something that I've noticed.
That's really interesting. Let's talk about the vocational side of things. I know that's something you're really passionate about. And from what I've been learning and seeing, it seems like Virginia Beach does have some really great options for that, though there's always room for improvement in anything that we do in life. So can you speak to what the current options are, as far as you're aware, obviously not being on the school board yet, but what you see as our current options, and what things would you like to see change, or how would you be looking to, you know, continue the development of those if you're elected?
So Virginia Beach actually has a really good vocational program. So, and for me, it would be more about increasing those classes. And then the other thing is, if I could do like, I would love for there to actually be a high school that could be dedicated towards that, because a lot of time is spent like traveling between their main school and then the vocational and all of that. And it's not just, a lot of people think electrical, auto body, you know, mechanical, they're thinking, you know, plumbers, you know, all that, which is exactly that. But the other thing is that there's, you know, barbershops, there is, the first responders, like those are technically under a trade as well. And I know there's a bunch of kids that grow up and say, hey, I want to be a police officer. Hey, I want to be an EMT. And we have JROTC programs, there's another one. I haven't done enough research, but I know there's a separate one where they're doing kind of like a, like almost a law enforcement academy for kids. But what it would be amazing is if we could actually, cause I think New York City does it, is that if we could have something that the kids would be like, hey, study law, study the Constitution, study the thing. You would come out with not only your regular classes, but you come out with 4 years under your belt of de-escalation tactics, all of that. I mean, I would love to, you know, there's a lot of red tape and everything that has to go along with that. And there's so many things that have to be addressed, but it's an idea. And I'd love to put it forward and then collaborate with people and see if we could do that. And that's, you know, paramedics the same way. I mean, there's not just... we pigeonhole people in it. And unfortunately also the trades have gotten a bad rep, because we're like, oh, it's dirty and people hate their job. And I love my job. I love going to work every day and working on equipment. Yeah. I come home dirty. Sometimes I come home greasy and like, I can't get smell of fuel off of me at all. But I love it. I love working with the equipment, and the people that I work with love their job too. And there's a misconception that you have to go to college to be happy, and that's just not what it is. I mean, there's starting out, I want to say an electrician starting out is like close into the 40s and stuff like that. So could you imagine coming out of high school and because you got prepared in high school, going straight into a trade and being happy with what you do instead of going to college and having $100,000 in debt getting a job that pays $42,000, but after taxes is more like, you know, 29, 30, and then not being able to pay off the debt. And, mm-hmm. you know, my bro actually addresses that. He's one of my, the dirty jobs guy.
Yeah.
He always addresses how that, you know, it's just insane that we've done that to the kids. And I'm not saying the college isn't for people, and that it's amazing. Like, you know, we need doctors and nurses. There's things that college, you know, you have to be there, but it's not the end all be all. And we need to give kids a different choice, you know?
Mm-hmm. So. I was part of, or I wasn't part of, but I attended a really interesting forum panel discussion, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. A year or so ago about the idea of workforce development, brain drain, the education system here, you know, they kind of talked to a lot of things. And one big topic that came up that I found really interesting was they were saying, you know, it feels like these kind of trade schools or workforce development kind of programs have really, like you said, gotten a bad rep, and they've actually almost been like, poorly marketed, where mm-hmm. people don't actually understand what the opportunities are. And mm-hmm. I mean, I can speak to that firsthand. I know I was telling you before, I went to a hospital-based radiology program out of high school, and half of my school was paid for by actually a city workforce grant. So, I mean, I think my parents paid like $2,500 for my education, and I paid them back once I started right. making really good money. And, yeah. You know, I went straight into that, and I had friends tell me like, so you're just going to be a button pusher, you know, like that's what you're going to do. And I was like, well, yeah, I just took 6 semesters of anatomy and physiology. Like I just took 4 semesters of radiation physics. You know, I have to understand every single chemical, physical reaction that happens from the moment I push that button all the way through the entire machine. We had to learn everything about, you know, all of the reactions that were happening within the machine, all the way the x-ray photons, how they interact in your body, how they interact in the film, how the film is then processed, all the way out to the finished product. I have to understand all of it. So I'm not just pushing a button. I'm actually, you know, there's a tremendous amount of stuff that goes into doing this. And, you know, there are people that do that job that just aren't as invested in really understanding what's going on. And they do kind of just push the button, you know, like, that don't care as much. It's just not as important to them to understand like the why behind what they're doing. And they'll just kind of run it on autopilot, and that's okay. But like they still got the training, you yeah. know, like they might not be as invested in like really getting right. into the details, you know?
Right.
But I think, and I've watched it with my friends. I mean, I have friends that, you know, have hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt and love what they do and are excited about it. And other friends that are getting crushed by student loans, you know, yeah. and I have other friends that couldn't really figure out what they wanted to do and got into a trade and have just totally excelled, love it, found their stride, you know, and they're getting opportunities to really move their life forward. My best friend's dad owns a commercial electrical company. And he takes all these guys from, and girls, but you know, the people I knew who work for him are mostly guys from like no knowledge, and pays for them to go through master electrician school. And I mean, here working on government contracts, they can make like $80,000 a year yeah. or more. And because we have such a shortage in those fields now, he was telling me that over the next 10 to 20 years, the guys that are doing that now could literally be making hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more, because there's such a tremendous shortage of people going into those fields. And so we actually, like, in order to continue developing, need more people there. So anyway, I know I'm going on and on, and this is about hearing from you, but I just think it's an important thing that people don't understand. So what else would you say, as someone who's been in a variety of trade settings, like what else do you think people misunderstand or might be surprised by about people that work in trades or some of the opportunities that are available to people? Does that question make sense?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So not only are people in the trades like passionate about what they do, but there's a sense of accomplishment because a carpenter sits there and depending on how good they are, can literally build a house. I mean, I'm not even as skilled as some of the things. And I was able to take a picture and some settings, and I was, you know, able to build my own table. It was the first one I had ever done. And I, you know, it's, you know, it actually holds stuff up. Like it didn't fall apart. And I was so happy about it. It was insane. I did another thing where, you know, from a YouTube video, I learned, I figured out how to put a deck together and no one's fallen through. So I feel like it's a win-win, but it's, and then the other thing is going in and fixing things that are broken. You get to say that, like, you get, and you watch it and it's broken. You can't get it. And you're watching the gears and you're saying, and you finally get it to where it opens and does what it's supposed to do, and you sit back and you're like, I got to do that. Like it's actually it's so it's just amazing to kind of, because it's like it improves your sense of self, and a lot of people I think don't realize that out of trades that it really it really makes you feel great about yourself, that you accomplished these things, that you either repaired something, built something, you made something, or you made someone else's life better. Cause I mean, literally electricians, think about it. People lose their electricity all the time. The Dominion Power guys, I mean, when we lose power, those guys are heroes to people, you know, when they get it back up. Same thing with when the hurricanes hit and it destroys, those carpenters that come out and work on the stuff, they're heroes to anybody. So that's any, true. You know, and it's like, and then, and you know, one thing during, you know, the COVID has really is that the trades have really been the essential, like the, you know, not just, you know, medical, not just everybody. There's no job that's not essential, but like, but when it comes to consistent work, I've noticed that the trades, like, there's been no let up, at least on my end. Mm-hmm. So and I know that even when you have that skill where some of the hairstylists that couldn't, the at the barbershops, remember, they couldn't do that in the building, but you know, they would go to people's houses and try and work it out that way. That's a skilled trade that is helping you and your family, you know what I mean? And so I just think it's you know, a lot of people don't realize like how much is involved. They always just, it was that iconic picture you remember back in the day where the guy was holding up the scholarship, the diploma, and was all happy. And then the trade, the guy with the wrench was sitting there like all sad and everything. The perfect segue to that was Mike Rowe's picture of the guy with the wrench sitting up being super happy and the person with the diploma being like, oh, because they got all these pounds of debt behind him and stuff like that. So it's kind of it's an interesting segue. And I think that, you know, we just need to give people more options and we need doctors. Like I said, we need doctors, we need nurses, we need neurobiologists, we need like all of those where you need to go to school, veterinarians. But it's, you know, it's also, we also need, you need your electrician, you need your plumbers. And a lot of times, you know, because of that stigma of like how trades are, that they, that I think there's a shortfall of how many tradespeople there are now. So
one suggestion that I heard that I thought was really interesting was looking at the way that the options are presented within school and trying to make sure that both options are presented as being equal opportunities, like actually looking at it as an equity issue. And I know that's a word that gets thrown around a lot, but seriously going, okay, these are both options are on equal footing. Cause I agree with you. Colleges can be so great and so important for so many people doing things, but you know, I know that it's not a great fit for everybody. And so we got to have good, equally good options for people that don't feel like they want to go that route. And I think another misconception about people in the trades that I noticed something, if I recall correctly from your website, is that you're passionate about teaching history. Is that right?
So, so I don't teach history, but
no, I mean in school.
Yes. So, I know it's, people have overheard it, so I hate saying the same thing over and over again, but, it's like history repeats itself, right? If you refuse to learn about it, then you'll continue to be doomed to repeat it. And then the other thing is that there's some amazing things in history, like just there are some horrible things in history, but there are some amazing things in history. And the main thing is, if you think about it, right, what the for the Revolutionary War, those founding fathers, right? If it hadn't gone that way, they all would have been hung for treason, right? So if you think about it, like they literally mm-hmm. were there and they went through so many different things that basically at any point in time, and if it had gone wrong, America would not be here today.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then the other aspect of it, it's a very interesting piece. You know, you can have an argument all day long about the Constitution and what it is, but when you look at the Constitution in itself, it's a very amazing piece of paper that they put together that it molded America. You know what I mean? And it's interesting because it's almost like they foresaw certain things happening. And so it's just like and then the other thing is that we learn through history, we learn by our mistakes, we learn from those things. And so if you don't teach it, you basically rob the next generation of being able to learn from our mistakes. Mm. Because the one thing that human beings don't like to do is admit when they're wrong, right? So if we hide that fact, right? Because if I did something wrong and like my kids were like, hey, you know, I'll be like, no, I was never wrong, ever. My whole life, I've never been wrong. Don't worry about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They never get to think. But if I admit to them, which I, you know, I'm honest with them and say, hey, listen, I'm telling you this because I was there. I'm telling you this because I've been the stupid teenager. I'm telling you this because, you know, although they probably ignore you and do exactly the opposite of what you told them to do. But you give them that by not teaching it, you rob them of the opportunity to learn from our mistakes, and you rob them from the opportunity to take those things from history, mold them, and actually, just like the trades, create something either amazing or create something even like completely new. You know what I mean? Just based on the idea of this over here. And so I think it's incredibly important. And in other countries, like their history is incredibly, there's a reason that people draw on walls. There's a reason that that there are hieroglyphics. There's a reason that because people want to tell their story.
Right.
And want to tell what happened to them. And by basically having it where there's no longer accreditation requirement. The thing is, they're like, oh, well, we didn't stop teaching it. But here's the thing. If you don't require it as a accreditation, then it gets looked at less, which means that they're not going to focus on it more. So if you know your math and science is required for accreditation, what are you going to focus on more? You're going to focus on the thing that might make it so that school doesn't get accredited. That's just my opinion. You know what I mean? There's no data point yet because it's just fairly new, but that's just something I just think it's incredibly important that we teach history, because otherwise, like I said, we're doomed to repeat it. And some things there are things in our history that are so bad that we should really not want to repeat them.
Absolutely. So. It's an interesting thing. So one thing I've heard just generally, not necessarily in these conversations, but I guess heard suggested or I think is a misconception about the trades is I think people assume that people who lean more towards vocational things are either not very intellectual, maybe not as intelligent, or maybe like don't care about studying or learning. You know, some of those things that I obviously don't think, but you know, I think it is a misconception that comes up around the trades that maybe people who are more oriented towards working with their hands, or maybe their brains just aren't wired in a way that works well sitting in a quiet room, you know, circling things on a piece of paper, but is extremely, extremely brilliant in other settings. You know what I mean? Yeah. So my grandpa was actually a highly skilled sheet metal worker in New York City. And he was one of the most intelligent and most highly well-read intellectual people I've ever met in my entire life. I mean, the man loved to learn. He was brilliant and, you know, deeply intellectual and, you know, was a skilled tradesman. And so I get a little concerned sometimes because I've heard people suggest that, you know, if we're going to increase vocational school, or say you had a vocationally focused high school, that they then potentially wouldn't teach some of the liberal arts things like history, or, you know, some of those type of core subjects where it's like, well, you're not going to college, or like, you're not going into, you know, you're in the trade. So like, you don't need to know that stuff. I actually think that that's personally, I'd be curious to hear your opinion, but I don't know that that's right, because I think it's a misconception on like who people are that are going into these areas. And like, I think humans need to know these things, not just like people going to college. Does that make sense?
No, it does. And you're right. There is a misconception that like, you know, the guy who's, you know, that you have this depiction of like the coal miner that is completely dirty and like, you know, he's not intellectual and all of these things. But the truth of the matter is the coal miner is down there, you know, doing math to make sure that he knows exactly how far down he's gone because of the sheer fact of that they have the stuff that I don't know that much.
Calculating oxygen and chemistry and all this stuff.
Down you go, if you don't give it a break, you literally will die. Yeah. And that's the difference. Your carpenters need math. Your carpenter needs, and the thing is, history plays a part in all of that because history tells you don't build a house like this because it will fall down. You know what I mean? And it's the same science, all of that. I mean, your HVAC deals with Freon, they deal with mathematics, they deal with all sorts of things that they've got to make sure that they do it right. Same thing with electrical. And the thing is, what people don't realize because they're not in it, they don't realize you're sitting on schematics that look like a different language sometimes, that are like literally like if a layman would like, you'd look here, can you tell me where this goes? They have no idea what the squiggly line means that's connected to this line that's connected. You know what I mean? No idea. Absolutely. It looks like hieroglyphics actually half the time. You know, when I first got into it, I was like, what is this? Is this, I think you gave me the wrong paper. So, you know, so it's like, it is true, but there's a misconception that it doesn't. And you know,
it's
you
really
would
not true.
Yeah, you would not be able to have a high school like necessarily that was dedicated towards trade without those main core classes. And they're called core classes even in high school because they're what build your foundation. You know what I mean? They're what build like just think of it like a slab on a house. You know what I mean?
Right.
That basically it's what stabilizes, is what keeps it stable. And it's the same basic concept that you have to have that although we all were like, what am I going to use algebra for? What am I going to use this for? But I've actually found that I've used algebra.
I use algebra more than just about anything else. Yeah. All the time.
I really appreciated the things later, English and literature and all those things, because it gave me passions I didn't really realize I had until a little bit later. That yes, when you're in English class and you're sitting there going like, oh, why do I have to read Grapes of Wrath again?
You know?
So, and I think today's kids may not really feel that pain yet. I don't know if you have to read that anymore in high school, but it's necessary. And there is that misconception when it comes to the trades. And I mean, some of the smartest people I know that I work with they're geniuses. They look at something and what we call troubleshooting, right? So something is broken and you know how it's supposed to work. So in your brain, you're sitting there going, okay, this comes out this way and this comes out this, and then it goes there. But you don't actually see the water and all of that coming through. You just know in your brain, that's the way it works. And so you actually have to almost visualize it here, put it on what you're with, and figure out what's broken. And so, I mean, you know, and some of the smartest people I know, like I said, are in the trades because they can literally visualize something and 2 seconds say, oh, it's that's missing, like a piece of, like a little tiny piece of metal. It just broke off. You can barely see it, but that was what was causing the main issue. So anyway, sorry, I was babbling a little.
It's great. No, we could obviously talk about this all night because it's an area that I think is super interesting. It doesn't get talked about a whole lot. And I appreciate you spending that much time on it with me. We can dive into some of the other topics, but I'm glad that we were able to spend some time there because I know you're passionate about it. Let's talk about the valedictorian, salutatorian awards. I know that's another thing you're really passionate about. So the board, if anyone doesn't know yet, though I think we've talked about it on all of the school board interviews so far, but if you haven't heard any of the other ones, the school board, as I understand it, voted to make it not mandatory for schools to award a valedictorian, a salutatorian, or to have those people give the speech, if you will. And schools can still choose to do it on a school by school basis. But after this year, those awards are kind of going away as a district standard, and they've implemented this Latin honor system, sort of tiered program. And I've heard a few different explanations from incumbent candidates on why they decided to go that direction. I mean, one is providing more recognition for students that are high achievers that are not necessarily in the academies, because those classes are rated so much higher that it sounds like a lot of the kids that end up in those programs kind of sweep a lot of the awards. And it's, you can't really compete if you're not on that level, as well as I heard recently that it seems like it can kind of discourage kids from taking some liberal art classes because those classes not being as heavily weighted can actually reduce your GPA. And if it reduces your chance to compete for the highest position, if that's the only one that's recognized, then it kind of discourages students from taking those. So those were some interesting perspectives on the side of removing those awards. So what would be your argument on the side of reinstating the ValSal, if you will? And would you also keep the Latin honor system, or would you, you know, just do both, or would you be looking to completely revamp it if you could?
Yeah. So for the honor system, I'd have to do a little bit more research on it to figure out exactly like how they wanted to score everything. And so I don't want to say one way or the other because I haven't done enough research on it for that. But what I do know for the valedictorian, and for me, it's as simple as we award athletes, right? And we award Hollywood, and we give them their all their stuff for best actress and best actor, and for most improved player, and we have, you know, athletes awards. Why do we not give academics excellence, you know, for those that work really hard? I wasn't a valedictorian and salutatorian. I had good grades, but I was not a valedictorian and salutatorian. When I got into college, I had made the dean's list, like did that stuff, but I was not like the ones that were valedictorian, salutatorians. I mean, they worked hard. They worked incredibly hard. We always used to joke and say that they were the ones that didn't have fun in high school, but they did, because they were in every program. You know what I mean? They were in everything. They got to know everybody. And I think what you do by taking that away is that you say, well, you know, let's just strive for mediocre. You know what I mean? I know what they're trying to say, which is, you know, there should be multiple tiers and stuff like that and allow that. And we could have that, that discussion. But at the same time, if we're worried about the AP classes outshining the regular classes, then we could say, let's just do two then. Let's have valedictorian for, let's say, we'll take the AP classes. So we'll have valedictorian for AP, and we'll have valedictorian for the ones that aren't in AP. If we wanted to talk about that, we could have that discussion and figure out, you know, have two of them instead of just taking it away all completely. The other thing I have a problem with is, again, consistency. So this school can do it and this school doesn't do it because, you know what I mean? So it's like this person graduates from, we'll say, Green Run High School, right? And this one graduates from Salem, and they go, they're both going to, well, Green Run does valedictorian, let's say, right? And they both are going for the same scholarship, the same college, same everything. But this one gets to put valedictorian or salutatorian on their college transcripts. This one doesn't. And in some cases, that can be the difference between getting a scholarship, getting a full ride, or even getting into the really prestigious colleges. I mean, let's talk about Harvard, and I know they're, you know, halfway in the news half the time, but you know, talk about getting into them. I mean, that's not something that, I mean, they're writing letters, they're having, you know, everybody, right. You know, everybody and their mom is writing a stack of paper that says, hey, they're getting a good job. Well, what about that student that said, hey, on top of that, I got valedictorian? And everybody knows if you got valedictorian and you have all those ribbons all over you, you worked really, really hard. And so I think it's unfair to not say that with academic excellence that you read and you had good grades and you worked really, really hard, because it's not just a 4.0. I mean, they're getting like 4.5. So you know what I mean? It's like they went above and beyond, and they should get the award for it. There's principals. I know there's still principals list and like stuff. So it's not like we're taking away every single thing. Valedictorian is just the top, you know? So like I said, we could have the discussion. And that's the problem, I guess, I have with every time the school board seems to make a decision about certain stuff. It's like they see a problem and they're like, bam, let's try and like, let's just throw this at it. They're reactive and not proactive about it. You know what I mean? And it's as simple as this. Let's go and say, if this is the problem, let's take a little bit to figure out how to solve it. Let's get input from the parents because they're the ones that the kids are in. And let's put the students first. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's a great slogan, but it really is something that I want to be impassionate about. Education is supposed to be about the kids. So why are they not your primary responsibility? And so it's like, because, you know, kid, you know, high school is rough. Like school is rough, you know,
can be rough. Yeah.
And to take that away, then there are some kids that really, they need that excelling to, you know, they need that push to be like, hey, I'm always striving for something. You know, take that away. And I'm not really sure what you're teaching them, but I do know that a lot of times we're teaching them now there are no consequences. Oh, and there's nothing really that you can shoot for. And I think that's a huge mistake.
We talked a lot before in regard to more of the vocational things about creating more options for students. What's your thought on the idea of school choice, the money following the student, or, you know, voucher type programs or that type of thing? I've been trying to ask people, Mincy, because it's come up on the national level this year as, you know, something that's kind of being pushed by the current administration. So do you have an opinion or a position on that?
Yeah, I'm a big proponent for the money should follow the student. Because I'm not necessarily a big proponent for the voucher program because I'm still learning about that. And I've actually, like, at one point I thought it was a good idea. And then I kind of did more research and stuff like that and talked. And the problem I have maybe with the voucher program is there's probably a lot of like rules attached to that and like basically governmental control. And I'm very anti-governmental control when it comes to stuff because they don't always do stuff right. So, there's always strings attached to everything. And I always say it's like a puppet. Every time, the more strings you have, the less control of your movement you have. So,
good point.
And so for that, I would say like, I think the money should follow the students. But, and it's also because you've got homeschoolers, you know what I mean? You've got the, private schools that the parents are paying out of their own pocket, but they're also paying their taxes. And it's kind of unfair that, you know, they have to come out, you know, they buy these new laptops for all these like things. And then they're paying, you know, thousands of dollars for these private programs and then still paying, you know, towards the public school system. And it's just, I think it's unfair. So, and I think that and there's a lot of parents that really, agree with that. So, but I think it's worth a discussion, you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be one way or the other, and it's not set in stone. We can have that discussion and pick the best of here and the best of here. And let's do that. Let's figure it out because, you know, diversity of thought is how you get the best ideas. So
I do very much agree with you on that. Let's talk about COVID because I think school choice is much more interesting topic of conversation in the world we're in right now, where there's a lot of different learning options and situations happening. I think some parents are figuring out their kids actually thrive being in a remote setting or a virtual learning setting. Other parents, their kids do not do well in that setting. You know, it's tough for people with special needs. There's all kinds of different things going on. And I've been, you know, concerned and looking at parents who, you know, like my neighbor is a single dad and his son has special needs and he's young, you know, like he works. What's he supposed to do with his kid, you know, while he's virtually learning? Like those are really, really hard situations. And I know the school board is trying hard to address all of those and do all of those things. So what do you see that the school board, I guess I should say, if you were to be elected, hopefully we're making our way out of this, but I'm sure there's going to be COVID things for a little while. So, you know, what would you want to see accomplished in terms of just the COVID response, I should say, if you were to be elected?
So my main thing is that I've always been kind of like the parent's choice, right? I've always been a big push for letting that same thing I've always had. We always think it's like, you know, one way or the other. And it was like, you know, we could have probably done both. We could, you know, and they had, they kind of had that where they like, hey, here's all virtual. And then we had option one, which was virtual to a certain extent. And then they were going to go back to school and we had a plan, but then the plan, it was almost like they had it and they were like, you know, and like, it was, I wasn't really sure. Like it was very weird because every time you went back and forth and you were like, what happened? Like, I thought we had a plan and things change and that's fine. And, and you have to adapt and you have to adapt quickly. But at the same time, it's like, at this point we are, we have lost, I'm not 100% sure, but I know that I think at Virginia Beach, we haven't had a, I don't think we've had a child transmission yet. And we haven't had a death for a child, but I think we've had 5 suicides, but I'm not 100% sure. I know of 2 for sure, but my concern
in the student population.
Yeah. I know it was a child. I don't know if they were going directly to public school and stuff like that, but I know that, that my concern is that the social aspect, the isolation aspect is actually a lot more harming than we think. Because I know that people know that isolation is harming, but I don't think they realize to a certain extent how it is for kids. Cause you know, they love, you know, being with each other, hanging out and yes, you're right. There are those kids that have been really thriving in a virtual class, but I've had parents that have come to me and said, literally, like, what am I going to do? My kid is failing math and she's amazing at math, but she can't seem to get the virtual platform. She doesn't understand. She's sitting there, she's laying on her laptop crying. What am I going to do? And I'm heartbroken because I don't know what to tell them other than email the board. Like,
right.
I'm not there. There's nothing I can do except be there with them and be the shoulder. But you know, and that, and it's heartbreaking because it's like, and there's more and more kids that are like that. And so it's like, we really have to delve into, and that's where I say we need to really look at what's important for the kids and stuff like that. So, you know, I would just say that if we come up with a plan, that we need to execute the plan and we need to execute it as safely as possible. But at this point, if we're losing kids, or kids were, I mean, I think it's been 3,000 unenrolled from public school and gone to either private or homeschooled because of the situation. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, we're going to run into budgeting issues later about it. And so it's like, you know, I just think that if we're, you know, we knew we've been working on this since, let's see, the teacher shortage, we knew since March that was something going on. And
right.
Then we also knew that then we started working on this and they did this plan. And I know it's extremely difficult to implement that over thousands of people, thousands of kids. I'm not saying that it's not difficult, but if you had a plan in it and then all of a sudden you're like, well, there's no way that we can implement it because of this. Well, then why did you say and tell all the parents that you could do this if you were never going to be able to do it?
Mm.
So that's almost like, you know, it's like you lied to them a little bit. And I think that's why they're frustrated, because it's like one minute you tell them this and one minute you tell them that. And it's like, I think that's why it's frustrating. And it's like, it's the same thing with the teacher shortage. If you knew about it since March, why haven't we been addressing it before that? And then a year, I think it was either 2018 or 2019, we then talked about giving teachers raises, but then we pulled them, you know what I mean? But then all of a sudden now we're 5 days, what is it? How many days until the election? I don't know. I'm losing track of my days.
Not many.
So that many days from the election, and now we're giving the teachers raises, which is amazing. But why now? Why is it now that we only care about things 3 months from election, 2 months from election, 1 month from election? You either care about them all the time and you care about them the whole 4 years you're elected, or you just care about them when you want to get reelected. So, and I have an issue with that. So I think you should be honest and upfront all the time, not just right, or not just, you know, you're for the teachers, for the students right before an election.
So. We're right at the end of our time. I'd love to ask you one more quick question related to school security. I know you've worked in security and obviously been in the military. Thank you for your service in that, by the way. I didn't get to tell you before, but do appreciate that. Do you have any ideas related to school security specifically that you would be looking to implement if you were elected?
So one thing I would make sure that we really, so the school resource officers kind of get a bad rep, and that it, but the Virginia Beach school resource officers actually do a really good job. And they're not just, people think that they're just there to enforce the rules. And that's not really why they're there. They're there to, one, protect the kids, to be possibly the first line of defense before somebody that's not supposed to be there comes in. And then the other thing is sometimes, you know, they see these kids coming in all the time, right? And they talk to them and stuff like that. And so they sometimes can tell, like, when, you know, I'll just say Jimmy is having like a really bad day and what's, you know, what's going on. And they're also there to talk to them about stuff, about, you know, what, I mean, back in the day we had, he was the dog in the outfit with the hat and everything. Come in and talk to everybody and tell the kids about crime and, like, you know, all of this stuff. And that's what the resource officers, there's so much more that they do. And whereas everybody thinks that they're just there to arrest kids, and that's not what they're there for. Hmm. And Virginia Beach school resource officers do a really good job of, like, being fun. I actually posted a video of a school resource officer taking a trike around and joking with the kids, and they were all laughing and they had a great relationship with them. Awesome. And that's not what makes TV. What makes TV is the bad side of things. And there's always, doesn't matter where you work, you have a bad plumber, you're gonna have a bad electrician, you can have a bad doctor. I'm sure there are plenty of doctors that have killed patients on the table and should have never been on that table. Right. I'm sure there are plenty of, you know, railroad workers or whatever bad, you know, there's always
totally
a bad apple somewhere. You know what I
mean? You have humans.
Yeah.
There's gonna be people that make mistakes or aren't good at their job.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like we need to stop punishing everybody for that one thing. And my thing is, I definitely would not pull the school resource officers. We need kids to be safer, not less safe. I don't know what else they want to implement in place of that. But some of the ideas that I've heard, which is just pull them out and everything will be fine, that just seems. Just seems not very educated for an education person. So
on that note, we are pretty much at the end of our time, and I know we're right before the election, so I want to be mindful of your time. So just in closing, what's one thing that you would like everyone to remember about you specifically as they are going to vote?
So I guess for me, I mean, I'm pretty open book about stuff, and I'm pretty to the point. Actually, I think this is the most I've talked when it comes to explaining all of my stuff. Usually I'm pretty yes or no and everything like that. But
awesome.
But I know that I'll work with anybody. I can get along with anybody. And even if you disagree with me, I promise if you listen to me long enough, there will be something that you like out of what I say. So, my main thing is I'm here for the kids. At the end of the day, it's like, you know, I want the staff to be safe. I want the teachers to be safe. They deserve better. They absolutely do. But this is an education system. And the thing is, the kids should be put first and foremost every time. And the parents should be allowed to be parents of these teachers or of these students instead of basically the school telling the parents what they should be teaching their kids. You know what I mean? So that's what I think. I think it's important that we address that and say that, you know, the parents are their parents. The students deserve a good education.
Excellent. Well, you can learn more about Joanna on her website, joannamoran.com. There's two N's, Joanna with two N's, and MORAN.com. If you want to learn more about some of the other things that she is running on. Just a reminder, you can actually listen to Smart Citizen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you don't have time to sit and watch a video, this is a great way to absorb all of this information. Like Joanna said, she probably put a lot more out there than she has before. So if you want to get totally caught up on everything she thinks, make sure you do that. And follow Smart Citizen on Instagram, Facebook. We have a YouTube channel now with all of our videos up there as well. And we're kind of on Twitter, though I probably don't do a lot there compared to some of the other ones. But check us out, like, follow whatever platform you're watching this on. Leave us a comment and let us know something interesting that you learned in the conversation today. And please share this conversation with a couple of your friends that want to be more informed about vocational trade schools or vocational practices or things like that, or just our local election this year, and learn more about Joanna as well. Thank you so much for being on with us. I really enjoyed our conversation and getting to know you a little bit. And I look forward to maybe talking again in the future.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, I'm Emily Bowes. This has been Smart Citizen, and we'll see you guys next time.